It's Thursday, February 21st, and you're in bed with Rob and Alex.
I think we should say bedtime with Rob and Alex, because that's what the podcast is actually called.
It's true.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Rob, and chastened.
Chastened but not stirred. It's 10:31, which is the earliest we've done this, I think, ever.
Yes, I'm and so without happy. A little audience.
Yay. Well, no, we have actually, I think the first one or two we did not yet have Child back in bed, but tonight Child has returned. There's some Nutcracker standing on the bureau at the foot of our bed, and it's
about
very
to
menacing.
Plunge into the nether.
It's very menacing, even though somebody has broken its sword out of its hand. It's still very menacing. So today, I didn't tell you, I had this really great conversation with Ron Williams, who's our client on Happy Frog. Ron is an interesting guy because he's come to the web after a really long and pretty amazing career doing progressive journalism and publishing all over the U.S. and Canada, and he's worked as a journalist for a long, long time. Anyhow, it was funny because we were talking today about blogging, and he was saying how he had written a blog post the other day, and as he was writing it, he got most of the way through, and he realized he was writing it like a journalist instead of like a blogger, mm-hmm. and that he needed to like blogify it. And what was funny is that, we're so often talking to bloggers who want to learn how to write quote unquote properly, or more commonly, you read all these like media critiques of like, oh, these bloggers, they don't know how to be real journalists. But it's funny to think that actually it's also a challenge for real journalists to become bloggers. And it's like, there's this weird thing of like, we think about journalists as being like the real writers and bloggers as being these sort of second stringers, but it's actually just like a different medium, right? It's like, the same way going from writing screenplays to writing novels, it's like a different thing. And writing well in one medium isn't the same. I mean, I think it does translate, actually, because I think people who are good writers, really, and particularly very good writers, are able to adapt. And just the fact that Ron recognized that he, had a different voice that was needed, I thought was really interesting. But it was funny. We had a great little chat about it. It's interesting. And I love, actually, talking to people when they're in the middle of that kind of exploration and, like, finding their voice in a new medium. It's very exciting.
Yeah, it is.
I hope Ron's okay. I'll have to check with him and make sure he was okay with me sharing the story, but I don't think it reveals any state secrets.
No, I don't. What I find interesting about seeing the way that people come to blogging is the way the fundamental currency of writing doesn't really change. That the value of story continues to be really high. And all that, in some ways, it's the people who are the most comfortable in their own skin.
Yeah.
Who end up being really good bloggers or, essay writers or journalists. That there's just a level of confidence in the way that you're communicating that shines through no matter what medium that you've decided to adopt.
Well, I think one of the things that's really nice about blogging, actually, as a medium, is it makes that comfort more available to more people, because mm-hmm. I think there's like a thing that happens to people in school where you learn, I mean, think about all the rules you were taught in school. I don't know if you were taught, right, never begin a sentence with the word and or but, don't use contractions, don't speak in the first person, like all of this bullshit that you get taught when you're especially, I guess, for me, in grad school, right, when you're writing quote unquote academic materials, there's just such a formality that, and it doesn't sit very well on people.
Know.
And I mean, if you read academic writing, a lot of it is just like, it's more boring and stilted and hard to read than it even needs to be, because people are writing in this little box that really has nothing to do with how good your research is. Not using contractions does not in any way make your empirical results more or less valid. And I think what's happened with blogs is that because it's such an informal medium and it started, there still is this kind of like diaristic element to it. I think it's like liberating to people to be, and it's sort of, it gives people an excuse to write in a more conversational tone. And the reality is that's for in almost every circumstance, unless you're Jane Austen, which almost nobody is, you're really better off writing in that kind of immediate tone.
Yeah. Yeah, in some ways it's the most transparent, and it's voice. and it's not somebody else's voice that you're trying to appropriate. You know, it's so painful to read people writing speeches for the first time.
I've never written a speech, have I? I don't think so.
No? There, when you read a speech that's been written by somebody who hasn't before, they have an idea of what a speech is supposed to sound like. And it sounds nothing like them. Yeah. And yet, it should be the most personal of medium.
Well, I mean, it shouldn't sound like them. It should sound like the person who is going to give it, right?
Well, I'm assuming they're writing it for themselves. Oh, okay. But yeah. And the flip side of that is when I was speech writing, how far it would go just to write conversationally. And the response that I was constantly getting from people when I wrote conversationally, even if I had never heard them speak before in my life, never heard them string two words together, was, my God, you've captured my voice.
Right. Well, and it's true, you know, to the extent I very rarely, I mean, this is why I almost always speak just from point form notes, is because I sort of live in fear of that.
Yeah.
But when I have written out text, it's sort of been kind of transcribe my voice talking in my head and then have it there as a text to fall back on if I feel nervous. But I just hate speaking from text, but that's a whole other issue. Yeah, I mean, I think writing conversationally is good. And I mean, you know, it's actually, that exercise is actually not a bad way of doing it, is to try dictating something and then transcribing it or using some of that newfangled text-to-speech software. I haven't tried that in several years. I hear it's better now, right?
There is, just now out as of the last Macworld, a version of Dragon Naturally Speaking.
For Mac?
For the Mac, yeah. And? It's not actually branded as Dragon Naturally Speaking, but it's the underlying engine, and people were just going gaga over
really?
It. Yeah.
Is it $1 billion?
They were going gaga, because gaga was the only two words it would recognize. No, I don't think it is.
You know, it's so funny because having kind of gone down that road and back, and of course that was a number of years ago now and it sucked at the time, right now I can't really, like, it's, I don't know, I think what I found at the time was that my typing is so quick that, you know, 1% errors were really annoying. Like, it was really quite frequent and it really slowed me down. But if the accuracy is better... You know, I think I told you, Richard Powers. Yeah, the guy who wrote The Echo Maker, which I really loved, and Galatea 2.0. Galatea 2.0 is very good reading for any geek. It's about a Turing test. It's about a grad student who, no, it's not a grad student. It's about a writer in residence at a science facility who gets engaged in the process of trying to test and train a computer to take an oral English exam. It's really a fascinating, like, human-computer interaction story. Anyhow, Richard Powers, who wrote that, possibly because of writing that, or possibly this is how he came up with the idea, he dictates all of his books, and he writes his novels as text-to-speech, like dictation.
Wow.
He wrote a piece about it in the New York Times book review a couple months ago. It was quite interesting. I guess he dictated a piece to the New York Times book review a couple months ago. Yeah, I mean, and he just, it's a totally different experience. And, you know, here we are talking about writing more. I mean, it'd be interesting to know if you could record onto the iPhone and then play back or something and have it absorb the text, because it would be quite liberating to be able to write on the go like that and not have to be chained to a computer.
Yeah, or have your podcasts indexed and searchable.
Yeah, you know, the thing about that is at that point, who would listen to them? I mean, I'm always amazed that people prefer to watch Google or YouTube video how-tos rather than just read how-to. Like, I would always rather read the how-to than watch the how-to.
Well, you know me. I take software manuals into the bathtub with me.
Yeah, it's true you do. But, I mean, do people really... Why do people do those how-to videos? I mean, I can totally see that there are some occasional circumstances where a video is actually, you know, better for clarity. But most of the time I get the feeling like it's just like laziness or hepness on the part of the developer to do that, a video explanation is easier for them to produce than good documentation. I don't know.
I think they serve different purposes. I watch a lot of video walkthroughs.
Why?
You
don't find enough, really... Oh, the writer's strike. There hasn't been enough on TV.
Actually, there's been some good news. Lullabot's Drupal video how-to has been picked up as a mid-season replacement by NBC. No, what I find is it just speaks to different parts of my brain. I wouldn't use it as reference, but if I want, I'll tell you what the difference is. When I want to know what the capability of a particular piece of software is, I go to a video walkthrough. If I want to know how to, if I want to actually, you know, look up a particular function or figure out how to do something, that's when I go to text.
You know, I just don't have the patience. Like, the idea of even dedicating 3 minutes. I have watched 3 minute walkthroughs. That's about the upper limit of my tolerance. And otherwise, I just, like, feel like it's too much trouble to watch.
Really?
You think it's more efficient?
There's a 120 minute walkthrough that.
Are you kidding me?
Yes.
Thank God. So, you know what I was just thinking, apropos of your Lullabot joke? Yes. Do you think you could do, like, a software idol? It wouldn't involve people. I don't know. What would you do? What would a software idol be?
I'm not sure. Maybe, you know.
Well, it could be like that Launchpad thing from Web 2, where people. Well, they did sort of do that, right? Didn't American Idol spin off a kind of invention show?
You could just do a software version. That looks sort of terrible.
Where people pitch their software.
Well, what if every week, you know, it was a dev cycle?
Oh, brutal. So painful. Let's see who software, like, freaks out first and swallows everybody's data. You could do, like, a Facebook idol thing where you could do Facebook apps on, like, sudden death principle. Well, I guess it basically is like that already.
These features just felt like feature karaoke.
Yeah.
Paula would be telling them all how impressed she was with how well documented their code was.
You think she? Yeah, that would be so sweet. I love that. Maybe we should just have, forget software idol. Maybe it should just be software documentation idol. That's something I would watch. Oh, well.
And that's why we're not a Nielsen family.
It's
right there.
So true. Well, speaking of things that make me fall asleep, maybe it's time to go to sleep.
I think maybe.
Night, sweetheart. I love you.
I love you too. Good night, Internet.